website. Out of that pool of successful funds, of course there will be some five-star funds. Financial companies know very well about survivorship bias, but they care more about having a page full of funds with great performance numbers instead of revealing the actual truth. As a result, they've consciously created several ways to test funds quickly and only market the best performing ones, thus ensuring their reputation as the brand with the best funds. These tricks are especially insidious because you would never know to look out for them. For example, when you see a page full of funds with 15% returns, you naturally assume that they'll keep giving you 15% returns in the future. And it's even better if they have 5-star ratings from a trusted company like Morningstar. But now that we know about survivorship bias and the fact that most ratings are meaningless, it's easy to see that financial experts and companies are just looking to fatten their wallets, not to ensure you get the best return for your money. Burton G. Malkiel, the author of A Random Walk Down Wall Street, wrote, "A number of mutual fund management complexes employ the practice of starting incubator funds. A complex may start 10 small new equity funds with different in-house managers and wait to see which ones are successful. Suppose after a few years, only 3 funds produce total returns better than the broad market averages. The complex begins to market those successful funds aggressively, dropping the other 7 and burying their records." 3 legendary investors who did beat the market. Now, there are indeed investors who have beaten the market consistently for years. Warren Buffett, for example, has produced a 20.9% annualized return over 53 years. Peter Lynch of Fidelity returned 29% over 13 years. And Yale's David Swensen has returned 13.5% over 33 years. They have phenomenal investing skills, and they've earned their titles as some of the best investors in the world. But just because these guys can consistently beat the market doesn't mean you or I can. Yes, theoretically, it is possible to consistently beat the market, which you'll recall returns about 8% after inflation. That's true in the same way that it's possible for me to become a heavyweight boxing champion. With millions of people around the globe trying to beat the market, statistically, there are bound to be a few extreme outliers. Who knows whether their success is due to statistics or skill? But even the experts themselves agree that individual investors shouldn't expect to equal their returns. David Swensen, for example, has explained that he achieves outsized returns because of top-notch professional resources, but more important, access to investments that you or I will never have, such as the very best venture capital and hedge funds, which he uses to bolster his asset allocation. These professionals spend every waking hour studying investments, and they have access to proprietary information and deals. Mom-and-pop investors have no chance of competing with them. How to engineer a perfect stock-picking record. Since we know it's almost impossible to beat the market over the long term, let's turn to probability and luck to explain why some funds seem irresistibly compelling. Although a fund manager might be lucky for 1, 2, or even 3 years, it's mathematically unlikely that he'll continue beating the market. To examine probability theory, let's take a simple example of an unscrupulous scammer who wants to sell his financial services to some naive investors. Here's what he does. He emails 10,000 people, telling half of them that stock A will go up and telling the other half that stock B will go up. And he tells them, "This is just a freebie email to demonstrate my insider knowledge." After a couple of weeks, he notices that stock A has indeed gone up by chance. He now eliminates the stock B group and focuses on the stock A group, emailing them an "I told you so" note. This time, he splits the mailing in half again. 2,500 people are told about stock C, and 2,500 people are told about stock D. If either C or D goes up on the next cycle, at least 1,250 people will have seen him pick 2 stocks successfully. And each cycle will make the recipients increasingly awed and dazzled by his ability. Because we like to create order where there is none, We will ascribe magical stock-picking abilities to this scammer, even though it was literally by chance. And guess what else we'll do? We will buy whatever investment success kit he's selling. The same is true of the pages of five-star funds you see. Moral of the story, don't trust purported financial expertise just because of a few impressive stats. I bet you don't need a financial advisor. You've heard my rants against the media hype surrounding investment and the poor performance of most professional investors. Now there's one more category of financial professionals that I want to warn you about. Financial advisors. Now the natural tendency is to say, hey Ramit, I don't have time to invest. Why don't I just use a financial advisor? I know this old outsourcing argument. We outsource our car cleaning, our laundry, maybe our housekeeping. So why not the management of our money? Most young people do not need a financial advisor. We have such simple needs that if we just put a little bit of time in, a few hours a week over the course of, I don't know, let's say 6 weeks, we can get an automatic personal finance infrastructure working for us. Plus, financial advisors don't always look out for your interests. They're supposed to help you make the right decisions about your money, but keep in mind that they're actually not obligated to do what's best for you, at least the ones who are not what's called a fiduciary. Some of them will give you very good advice, but many of them are useless. If they're paid on commission, they'll usually direct you to expensive, bloated funds to earn their commissions. By contrast, fee-only financial advisors simply charge a flat fee and are much more reputable. Now, you should note that neither is necessarily better at providing good investment returns or your top line. They simply charge differently, which affects your bottom line. The key takeaway is that most people don't actually need a financial advisor. You can do it all on your own and come out ahead. But if your choice is between hiring a financial advisor or not investing at all, then sure, hire one. There are also some other categories of people who can benefit from a financial advisor. People with really complex financial situations, like those who are entrepreneurs, or those who have inherited or accumulated substantial amounts of money, like over $1 million or $2, and those who are truly too busy to learn about investing for themselves, could benefit from an advisor's help. I will say that it is better to pay a little and get started investing than to not start at all. So if you're determined to get professional help, you can begin your search at the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors. That's NAPFA.org. These advisors are fee-based, meaning they usually have an hourly rate, not commission-based, which means they want to help you, not profit off their recommendations. But I want you to remember this. Lots of people use financial advisors as a crutch and end up paying tens of thousands of dollars over their lifetime simply because they didn't want to spend a few hours learning about investing. If you don't learn to manage your money when you're young, you will cost yourself a ton one way or another, whether you do nothing or you pay someone exorbitant fees to manage your money. Dave Nelson, who's 40 years old, wrote, "Oh geez, I lucked into a one-time windfall and I tried to do the smart thing by using a financial planner recommended by my bank. He put me in terrible funds that both underperformed the S&P and had insane fees. Lost about 30% of my money. Eventually moved everything to Vanguard index funds, and no regrets about the move. Nothing but regrets about the wasted time and money trusting a professional." Tom T., 35 years old, wrote, "At my first job, my company offered seminars hosted by a former employee who was now doing investments. He gave pretty standard advice, like save in your 401k, use a Roth IRA, etc. I went for a consult and set up a Roth IRA with him. He also sold me on the investment advantages of whole life insurance policies. Then my wife looked at the details and said, nope. She called them to cancel everything and get our money back. We got almost everything back, which was good because initial outlays were almost five figures. Around that time, I got your book and moved my Roth from him to Vanguard. I haven't looked back since." My friend realizes his financial advisor has been taking him for a ride. Years ago, my friend Joe emailed me asking me to take a look at his investments. He suspected he was being taken for a ride by his financial advisor. Within 5 minutes of talking to him, I knew he was in trouble. Joe is a young entrepreneur with high earnings, so this advisor figured he was a meal ticket for the next 4 decades. I told him the following. There are certain keywords that are major red flags when it comes to investing, including whole life insurance, annuities, and Primerica. Any one of those words means, at best, you're almost certainly overpaying, and at worst, you're being scammed. I told him you're being overcharged, and with your income, the fees you pay will be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. Or with his income, it would actually have been over $1 million over his lifetime. And finally, I told him you should move everything to a low-cost broker. You'll pay lower fees, and you'll get better performance. Now, when you do this, your advisor is going to freak out and use every emotional tool in his arsenal to prevent you from doing it. Therefore, communicate in writing. The show was about to begin. I sat back in my chair and rubbed my hands together. I live for this shit. Over the course of the next week, he and his advisor emailed back and forth. And predictably, the advisor was shocked, absolutely shocked, I tell you, that his client wanted out. Here are some of the exact words he used. I am shocked, especially since we have spoken several times in the last few months, and I have not heard any complaints or concerns. Taking on a large task of doing all your own planning and investing doesn't seem like a good idea. My favorite was this. However, if you still feel that you would like to fire me, I can list out instructions to close your accounts. The most hilarious part was that my friend simply refused to get baited by all the emotional manipulation. He just calmly replied and said, I'm not confident that some of the decisions we made together were truly in my best interest. Whether the loss of confidence is justified or not, it'll be hard to have a professional relationship going forward with how I currently feel. I give Joe an absolute A+. Not only will he keep hundreds of thousands of dollars in fees, he's shown us what having a backbone with your own money looks like. If you're currently working with a financial advisor, I encourage you to ask them if they are a fiduciary. That is, if they're required to put your financial interests first. Joe's advisor was not a fiduciary. He was a salesman. That was instantly obvious to me by his recommendation that Joe, at that time a single man in his 20s, quote, invest in life insurance. The only reason for someone like Joe to have life insurance is if he had a dependent, not to fatten his advisor's wallet. If you discover that your advisor is not a fiduciary, you should switch. Don't be worried about the variety of emotional tactics and manipulation that they'll use to get you to stay. Keep your eyes on the prize and put your financial returns first. When two wealth managers tried to recruit me. A few years ago, a friend suggested I talk to a wealth manager. I declined, but he was insistent. Why not? My friend asked. Oh, I don't know. Maybe because I wrote a New York Times best-selling book on investing in personal finance. Okay. I took a deep breath and reminded myself, be humble, Ramit. I decided to take the call. The friend told me that these advisors worked for a wealth management firm that I won't name. Who am I kidding? I'm going to tell you right now who they worked for. They worked for Wells Fargo Private Wealth Management. Let me digress for a moment and remind you why I hate Wells Fargo and Bank of America. These big banks are pieces of shit. They rip you off, charge near extortionate fees, and use deceptive practices to beat down the average consumer. No one will speak up against them because everyone in the financial world wants to cut a deal with them. Well, I have zero interest in deals with these banks. If you use them, don't. If you do, you're asking to be mistreated. You can just Google Ramit Best Accounts for the best checking accounts, savings accounts, and credit cards. I make no money from these recommendations. I just want you to avoid getting ripped off. Anyway, back to the story. When I heard these guys worked for Wells Fargo, I knew I had to take the call, mostly because I hate almost all wealth managers and because I love role-playing. Now, quick background on what wealth managers do. They find a person with money, ask them a bunch of questions, and help them plan their finances and investments. Sounds good, right? They also give you prestige services like portfolio analysis, international mortgage assistance, tax planning services, etc. In exchange for this, they charge you a fee based on percentage of assets, a small number, like 1 or 2%. Oh my God, the fees. We'll get to that in a minute. So I get on the phone with these two advisors. They work in Beverly Hills, and they have these amazing, buttery British accents. I love British accents. They know nothing about me. They didn't do even 2 seconds of research. So I'm sitting there telling myself, this is going to be the best call of my life. They ask me what I do for a living. I tell them internet entrepreneur. Oh, they tell me we work with entrepreneurs and celebrities. Celebrities are targets for wealth managers because 1, they make a lot of money. 2, usually for only a short period of time. And 3, they don't know anything about money. They just want to delegate it. So these advisors start telling me about their services, how they help their clients focus on their work and handle all their financial stuff. The implication being that I'm too busy buying Lamborghinis and bottle service to pay attention to my investments. Little do they know, I love asset allocation and I actively study it for fun. They tell me how they keep my money safe, how they know that I need the money to be here for tomorrow, playing on my fear of loss. I play dumb and I ask a lot of basic questions. How does it work? What do you do with my money? I'm careful not to use phrases like tax loss harvesting or dollar cost averaging or even compound interest. Instead, I ask things like, can you guys help with taxes? We were on a phone call, but I could almost feel their eyes lighting up as they eagerly told me all the complicated ways that they could save me money on taxes, when in reality, there are relatively few tax loopholes for the wealthy. Then, in their beautiful accents, they say something that sounds innocuous, but is actually extremely revealing. We don't try to match the market. We focus on asset preservation. Did you catch that? What they really mean is, our investment returns will be below what you could get from a cheap Vanguard fund. In plain English, you can buy salt for $1. We'll give you worse salt and charge you $2, but we'll deliver it on a beautiful leather tray every 6 months. At this point, I'm laughing out loud. I hit mute on the phone so I can keep up the charade. They never ask about my goals, such as, why would a guy in his 30s, early in his career, be focused on wealth preservation instead of growth? More important, how much do their services cost? I innocently ask about fees. Now, at this point, I truly can't stop smiling because I know what's about to happen. Oh my God, I literally can't wait. This is the best part. Oh my God, the fees. When I ask how much it costs, their tone changes to dismissive. If you've ever hung around rich people talking about how much something costs, you know what I mean. This is what they said. Well, the investment fee is a nominal 1%, but we're here to focus on the long-term relationship of getting your finances ... Did you catch that? First, they glossed over the fee. The fee's a nominal 1%. 1%? Who cares about that? Second, notice that they quickly redirected the conversation back to comfortable words like long-term relationship that their target client would actually want to hear. Why? Well, here's why. By the way, if I recall, the fee was actually somewhere between 1 and 2%. Just to be conservative, let's call it 1%. 1% doesn't sound that bad, right? Did you know that over time, a 1% fee can reduce your returns by around 30%? No, of course you didn't. Nobody does. That means if I invested $100,000 with them, their fees would reduce my $2.1 million to $1.5 million. And guess who gets that money? Not me. They do. All for one phone call. No thanks. I prefer to keep my money for myself. The average person genuinely does not understand how crushing these fees are because the math is extremely counterintuitive. Wall Street has engineered it to be opaque. 1% doesn't seem like a lot, but in actuality, it is gargantuan. Investing on my own, I could get better returns and pay less. Want to play a fun game? Call your parents up and ask them what they pay in investment fees. They don't know, I guarantee you that. And if they found out what it actually cost them, they would be depressed. On second thought, don't do this. 1% can cost you 28% of your returns. A 2% fee can cost you 63% of your returns. These numbers are unreal, but they are correct. It's why Wall Street is so rich. It's also why I insist you learn this for yourself and why I get so mad when Wall Street rips off individual investors. If you are listening to this and you're paying over 1% in fees, I'm going to kill you. Get smart. You should ideally be paying 0.1 to 0.3%. Think about that. Think about the hundreds of thousands of dollars, even millions, that you can keep instead of paying some wealth manager. You might pay someone to mow your lawn, maybe clean your apartment, but your money is different. Fees compound. The good news is that you're listening to this book now. If you can breathe oxygen and understand English, this book will make you a lot of money, more than you could possibly imagine compared to letting it sit in a savings account. So, back to the advisors. In retrospect, it would have been awesome if I just dropped a super technical question on them, something about Black-Scholes or foreign currency exchange, and then said, well, talk to you guys later. Unfortunately, I really suck at coming up with comebacks on the spot. So here are the takeaways from this story. Number one, I love pretending I know nothing about money with so-called professional advisors. This was one of the best days of my life. Number two, the vast majority of you do not need a wealth manager or even a financial advisor. You've already got this book. Listen to it. Use it. Living a rich life is not that hard if you follow advice that works for everyone. Number three, wealth managers know they cannot beat the market, so they try to focus on other ways they can add value, such as anyone can make money in a bull market. We'll help you when the market shifts. And we can advise on taxes, wills, and trusts and insurance. All of those are legit, but none of them requires you to pay a commission-based advisor. If you get skittish when the market goes down, I think the better answer is to develop the skills to stay resilient and focused during a market downturn yourself. Don't make decisions out of fear. Trust in yourself and your financial system. Number four, once you have seven figures in assets, or complex transactions involving kids or retirement or taxes, maybe then you've earned the right to consider advanced advice. Hire a fee-only financial advisor for a few hours or see my website for my advanced course on personal finance. So you really think you need a financial advisor? If you really want to look into hiring a financial advisor, here's an introductory email that you can adapt and send. Hi, Mike. I'm looking for a fee-only financial planner, and I found you on NAPFA.org. A little bit about me. I have $10,000 in total assets, $3,000 in a Roth IRA, which is uninvested, $3,000 in a 401k, and $4,000 in cash. I'm looking for investments that will maximize long-term returns while minimizing costs. If you think you can help me, I'd like to meet for half an hour and ask you some specific questions. I'd also like to hear how you've worked with similar people with similar goals. Would next Friday 2-6 at 2 p.m. work? Alternatively, Monday 2-9 is wide open for me. Thanks, Ramit. For your 30-minute meeting, which shouldn't cost you anything, you'll want to come prepared with questions. There are hundreds of sample questions available online. You can just search for financial advisor questions, but at the very least, ask these three. First, are you a fiduciary? How do you make money? Is it through commission or strictly fee only? Are there any other fees? What you're looking for is a fee-only advisor who's a fiduciary, meaning they put your financial interests first. Any response to this question, other than a clear yes, is an instant no hire. Second, have you worked with people in similar situations? What general solutions did you recommend? Then get references and call them. Third, what's your working style? Do we talk regularly or do I work with an assistant? You want to know what to expect in the first 30, 60, and 90 days. And that's how you do it. Pundits worth reading. Here are three money columnists and one forum that I love. Morgan Housel writes one of the most interesting blogs on psychology and money out there. Read his post to understand why you do what you do and why the herd does what it does. collaborativefund.com/blog. Dan Solon, author of a number of great investing books, writes a terrific newsletter where he names names and calls out the BS of the investing industry. Here are a few topics he's tackled. Cracks in the robo-advisor facade. active fund managers are losers, and find the courage to be different. DanielSolin.com. Ron Lieber writes the Your Money column for the New York Times. I love the variety of topics he tackles, and he is always pro-consumer. RonLieber.com. Finally, I love the Bogleheads Forum, where you can find good investing advice. They'll steer you clear of scams and fads and refocus you on low-cost, long-term investing. Bogleheads.com/forum. Active versus passive management. Please know that even with all this doom and gloom about professional investor performance, I'm not in any way saying that investing is a waste of money. You just have to know where to invest. Mutual funds, which are simply collections of different investments, like stocks or bonds, are often considered the simplest and best way for most people to invest. But as we've seen, fund managers fail to beat the market 75% of the time, and it can be hard to tell which funds will actually perform over the long term. And no matter how good a mutual fund is, the returns are hampered by the large fees they charge. Sure, there are some low-cost mutual funds, but because of the way they compensate their portfolio managers and employees, it's virtually impossible for them to compete with the low costs of passively managed index funds, which I'll talk about in a minute. When it comes to investing, as discussed, fees are a huge drag on your return. This is a little counterintuitive since we're used to paying for service, like our gym membership or admission to Disneyland. If we're getting something out of it, we should pay a fair price, right? The key is fair, and many of the financial experts we turn to for guidance make an effort to squeeze every last cent out of us. You see, mutual funds use something called active management. This means a portfolio manager actively tries to pick the best stocks and give you the best return. Sounds good, right? But even with all the fancy analysts and technology they employ, portfolio managers still make fundamentally human mistakes, like selling too quickly, trading too much, and making rash guesses. These fund managers trade frequently so they can show short-term results to their shareholders and prove they're doing something, anything, to earn your money. Not only do they usually fail to beat the market, but they charge a fee to do this. Mutual funds typically charge 1 to 2% of assets managed each year. This percentage is known as a fund's expense ratio. In other words, with a 2% expense ratio and a $10,000 portfolio, you'd pay $200 per year in fees. Some funds even tack on additional sales charges or loads to the purchase price, which is a front-end load, or sales price, which is a back-end load of the fund. These are just some of the tricky ways that mutual fund managers make money, whether they perform or not. 2% doesn't sound like much until you compare it with the alternative, passive management. This is how index funds, which are a cousin of mutual funds, are run. These funds work by replacing portfolio managers with computers. The computers don't attempt to find the hottest stock. They simply and methodically pick the same stocks that an index holds. For example, the 500 stocks in the S&P 500, and they attempt to match the market. By the way, an index is a way to measure part of the stock market. For example, the NASDAQ index represents certain technology stocks, while the S&P 500 represents 500 large U.S. stocks. There are international indexes and even retail indexes. Most index funds stay close to the market or to the segment of the market they represent. Just as the stock market may fall 10% one year and gain 18% the next year, index funds will rise and fall with the indexes they track. The big difference is in the fees. Index funds have way lower fees than mutual funds because there's no expensive staff to pay. Vanguard's S&P 500 index fund, for example, has an expense ratio of 0.14%. Remember, there are all kinds of index funds. There's international funds, healthcare funds, small cap funds. There are even funds that match the overall U.S. stock market, which means that if the market goes down, these index funds will go down. But over the long term, the overall stock market has consistently returned about 8% after inflation. Let's look at the performance from two sides. The downside, fees, and the upside, returns. First, let's compare the fees for a passively managed fund with those for an actively managed fund. Let's assume that you're investing $100 a month and that you're getting an 8% return over the long term. I want to compare the passively managed index fund with a 0.14% expense ratio with an actively managed mutual fund that has a 1% expense ratio. After 5 years, here's what would happen. With a passively managed index fund, you'd have $7,320. With an actively managed mutual fund, you'd have $7,159. The difference is about $161.64. Doesn't seem like that big of a deal over 5 years. Well, let's fast forward now. Instead of 5 years, let's talk about what happens at 25 years. With a passively managed index fund, your return would equal $92,967. But with an actively managed mutual fund, remember with that 1% expense ratio, you have $81,007. What's the difference? With the lower cost index fund, you have $11,959 more, all for doing nothing. Now let me show you how these numbers change at higher levels. Remember, what seems like a small fee actually turns into a huge drag on your performance. This time, let's assume you put $5,000 into an account and you add $1,000 a month, same 8% return. After 5 years, you save $1,925 with the lower cost index fund. And after 25 years, guess how much you'll save with the lower cost index fund? Well, you'll save $126,418.53. Guess where that money goes? Right in your pocket. John Bogle, the Vanguard founder, once shared a shocking example with PBS documentary series Frontline. Let's assume you and your friend Michelle each invested in funds with identical performance over 50 years. The only difference is that you paid 2% lower fees than she did. So your investment returned 7%, while hers returned 5%. What would the difference be? Any guesses? On the surface, 2% in fees doesn't seem like much. It's natural to guess that your returns might differ by 2% or even 5%. But the math of compounding will shock you. Mr. Bogle said, assuming a 50-year horizon, the second portfolio would have lost 63% of its potential returns to fees. Think about that. A simple 2% in fees can cost you over half of your investment returns. Or that 1%. Remember that 1% fee? Can't be that much, right? For the same 50-year time period, that fee will cost you 39% of your returns. Oh, I know. Maybe 50 years is too long to think about. Why don't we try 35 years? What would a 1% fee cost you? Try a 28% reduction in your retirement returns, according to the Department of Labor. This is why I'm so fanatical about reducing fees. In investing, fees are your enemy. If your decision was determined by fees alone, index funds would obviously be the clear choice. But let's also consider another important factor, returns. Despite my hammering home the fact that mutual funds fail to beat the market 75% of the time, I will say that they do occasionally provide great returns. In some years, some mutual funds do extraordinarily well, and they far outperform index funds. In a good year, for example, a fund focused on Indian stocks might return 70%. But 1 or 2 years of great performance only gets you so far. What you really want is solid, long-term returns. So if you're thinking about using a broker or actively managed fund, call them and ask a simple point-blank question. What were your after-tax, after-fee returns for the last 10, 15, and 20 years? Yes, their response must include all fees and taxes. Yes, the return period must be at least 10 years because the last 5 years of any time period are too volatile to matter. And yes, I promise that they will not give you a straight answer because that would be admitting that they didn't beat the market consistently. It is that hard to do. So, the safe assumption is that actively managed funds will too often fail to beat or even match the market. In other words, if the market returns 8%, actively managed funds won't return at least 8% more than 3/4 of the time. In addition, when you combine that with their high expense ratios, actively managed funds have to outperform cheaper, passively managed funds by at least 1% to 2% just to break even with them. And that simply doesn't happen. In the book called The Smartest Investment Book You'll Ever Read, Daniel Solon cites a study conducted by Professor Edward S. O'Neill from the Babcock Graduate School of Management, now called the Wake Forest School of Business. O'Neill tracked funds whose sole purpose was to beat the market. What he discovered was that from 1993 through 1998, less than half of these actively managed funds beat the market. And from 1998 through 2003, only 8% beat the market. But wait, there's more. When he looked at the number of funds that beat the market in both time periods, the results were, as he put it, sad indeed. The number of funds that beat the market in both periods was a whopping 10, or only 2% of all large cap funds. Investors, both individual and institutional, and particularly 401k plans, would be far better served by investing in passive or passively managed funds than in trying to pick more expensive, active managers who purport to be able to beat the markets. Bottom line, there's no reason to pay exorbitant fees for active management when you could do better, for cheaper, on your own. Yet you and I both know that money isn't purely rational, even listening to the clear math here. It's emotional. So once and for all, let's tackle the invisible money scripts that keep people believing that active investment is worth it. Then we can start investing. Invisible scripts about financial advisors. I don't know. I just want to pay someone to take it off my hands. What it means. It's natural to be intimidated by all the jargon and confusing advice. But this is your money. Learning the fundamentals will be the single most profitable decision you've ever made. There's a famous quote from self-development legend Jim Rohn, who says, "Don't wish it was easier. Wish you were better. Don't wish for less problems. Wish for more skills. Don't wish for someone to hold your hand like you're a 4-year-old, skipping rope and chewing bubble gum. Wish to build the discipline of long-term investment, like an adult. Others have done it, and you can too." Invisible script. I like him. He's really trustworthy. Also, my dad used to use him. What it means. Listen, I like my local bagel guy. Does that mean I should invest with him? No! Our tendency to conflate likable with trustworthy is absolutely amazing. One great study at the University of Chicago demonstrated this. The title of the study was, "U.S. Doctors Are Judged More on Bedside Manner Than Effectiveness of Care." Your advisor might be likable. He might be funny and thoughtful. But when it comes to your money, focus on results. Invisible script. I'm afraid of losing money. What it means. Good. Then you should know that every dollar you're paying to an advisor via fees is a dollar you could have invested. For example, a 1% fee can reduce your returns by around 30%. Invisible script. My guy's beaten the market for the last 4 years. What it means. Maybe he has. But once you factor in all the fees and all the taxes, which naturally he will obscure, maybe he really hasn't. As research shows, just because someone is hot now doesn't mean they will be in the future. Sung-woo Kim, who's 28, wrote, "I signed up for this retirement fund that charged a lot for management, and now I have to put money in every month for 5 years to get it out. At the time, I was convinced by the financial advisor's demeanor and fancy words. I'm debating whether I should get the money out with a $1,000 loss for the cancellation fees. I feel like such an idiot for signing up for a dumb fund with a crazy fee like this." Lucinda B., 33 years old, wrote, "Just before I got married, I decided to speak to a financial advisor. I wanted to get a good picture of my position before I merged my financial life with my husband's. His fee wasn't ridiculous compared to the top of the market, but his advice certainly was. Scaring me into buying managed products with ongoing fees that I didn't need. It made my financial position seem more complex than it actually was, and I still had no idea of what to do. While on honeymoon, I read I Will Teach You to Be Rich for the first time, and when I got back, I reversed most of the decisions the financial advisor had made. Now that you've listened to the myth of expertise, it's time to see exactly how you can invest your own money to get better returns for lower cost. In the next chapter, I'll teach you everything you need to know about investing, and we'll cover all the technical aspects of selecting and automating your investments. Let's do this. By the way, if you're looking for action steps, keep listening. This chapter has been strictly informational, but in the next section, you'll make some major decisions. Chapter 7. Investing isn't only for rich people. Spend the afternoon picking a simple portfolio that will make you rich. In the previous chapter, you heard about how useless investing experts are and how we can do better on our own. Now we've arrived at the promised land. This is the chapter where you will learn how to choose your own investments, pay less in fees, and get superior performance. You're going to determine your investing style by asking yourself some key questions. Do you need your money next year, or can you let it grow for a while? Are you saving up for a house? Can you withstand big day-to-day changes in the stock market, or do they make you queasy? Then you're going to research funds and pick the exact investments to meet your goals. This includes all your investment accounts, like your 401k and your Roth IRA. By the end of this chapter, you'll know exactly what to invest in, and more importantly, why. And you'll do it with minimal human involvement, including minimal expense. My goal is to help you pick the simplest investment to get started and to make your portfolio easy to maintain. By just doing those two things, you will be well on your way to getting rich. You'll realize that lots of people with high salaries have no savings or investments. And you'll start noticing the excuses people make to justify not investing, including, I don't have time, and stocks can go down, and I don't want to lose my money. Most people don't know the first thing about how to pick investments, but now you will. Ah, the promised land is sweet. Smit Shah, who's 30 years old, wrote, I used the advice from IWT to set up my Schwab IRA, personal investment account, and checking account prior to starting my first job when I was 24. I'm now 30 and have over $300,000 saved between my personal investment account, 401k, and Roth IRA. A better way to invest. Automatic investing. Let's be honest. Nobody really loves managing their money. I'd rather be using my money, like taking a food tour in Tokyo or a weekend ski trip with my friends. Basically, I'm always on the lookout for ways to spend less time and get better results. Remember how I talked earlier about all those systems that I loved creating? The system for applying to 65 scholarships? The system to manage 2,000 emails a day? Well, I am very, very interested in paying less attention to my money while getting better returns. So I've taken pains to research investments that don't take lots of time to maintain, and they also pay off. This is why I urge you to combine a classic low-cost investing strategy with automation. Now, automatic investing is not some revolutionary technique that I just invented. It's a simple way of investing in low-cost funds that is recommended by Nobel laureates, billionaire investors such as Warren Buffett, and most academics. It involves spending most of your time choosing how your money will be distributed in your portfolio, then picking your investments, which surprisingly takes the least amount of time, and finally automating your regular investments so you can sit and watch TV while your money grows. Hey, we're lazy. We might as well embrace it and use it to our advantage. Now, automatic investing works for two reasons. First, lower expenses. As I discussed in Chapter 6, nothing kills your investment performance more than expensive funds that invisibly drain your returns. Investing in them is especially crazy when you can earn better returns with lower fees. Why would you pay for the privilege of losing your money? Well, with automatic investing, you invest in low-cost funds. which replace worthless, expensive portfolio managers, and you save tens of thousands of dollars in trading fees, taxes incurred by frenetic trading, and overall investment expenses, thereby allowing you to outperform most investors. Second, it's automatic. Automatic investing frees you from having to pay attention to the latest hot stock or micro change in the market. You pick a simple investment plan that doesn't involve any sexy stocks or guessing whether the market's going up or down, and then you set up automatic contributions to your investment accounts. In this way, you effectively trick yourself into investing because it requires no work from you. This means you can focus on living your rich life, doing your job well, spending time with friends and family, traveling to different countries, eating at great restaurants, instead of worrying about your money. I might as well call this Zen investing for people who have real lives. And that is why I will never be a naming consultant. Too good to be true? The way I described automatic investing was basically the same as saying, puppies are cute. Nobody would ever disagree with what I just said. Automatic investing sounds perfect, but what happens when the market goes down? Well, it's not as easy to go along for the ride then. For example, I know several people who had automatic investment plans, and when the stock market incurred huge losses in late 2008, guess what they did? They canceled their investments and took their money out of the market. That was a huge mistake. The test of a real automatic investor is not when things are going up, but when they are going down. For example, in October 2018, the stock market dropped and one of my investment accounts decreased by more than $100,000. That's in 1 month. I did what I always do. I kept investing automatically every single month. It takes strength to know that when the stock market goes down, you're still going to keep buying. In fact, you're basically getting shares on sale. And if you're investing for the long term, the best time to make money is when everyone else is getting out of the market. Bottom line, automatic investing may not seem as sexy as trading in hedge funds and biotech stocks, but it works a lot better. Again, would you rather be sexy or rich? Joe Fruh, 34 years old, wrote, I started investing about 3 years ago after reading a bunch of finance books, including yours. I started pretty late and was almost 31, but I feel pretty good about my progress. I'm maxing out my Roth, where I'm investing more aggressively, and also putting 15% in my 401k with Vanguard, all index funds. I'm the first in my family to do this, so it took a while to figure out, but now it's on autopilot, so it feels great. Do you believe everything your friends tell you? Question: my friends tell me that investing is too risky and that I could lose all my money. Is that true? Answer: that's an instinctive emotional reaction, not a well-reasoned logical response. Now, I can understand being nervous about investing, especially when you read press articles that use phrases like market correction and stock drops 10% overnight. With headlines like that, it's easy to practice the DNA style of investing, which is the do-nothing approach. It's actually really unfortunate that the people who are afraid of investing in the market right now are usually the very same people who buy when prices are soaring. As Warren Buffett has said, investors should be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful. For you, though, it's different. You understand how investing works, so you can put a long-term perspective into practice. Now, yes, in theory, it's possible for you to lose all your money. But if you've bought different investments to create a balanced or diversified portfolio, you won't. You'll notice that your friends are concerned with the downside. Oh my God, you could lose everything. How will you have time to learn how to invest? There's so many sharks out there trying to take your money. Well, here's a question for them. What about the downsides of the money they're losing every day by not investing? Do this. Ask your friends what the average return of the S&P 500 has been for the past 70 years. How much money would they have had if they invested $10,000 today and didn't touch it for 10 years or 50 years? They won't know because they don't even know the basic return rate to assume, which is 8%. When people say investing is too risky, it's because they don't know what they don't know. The magic of financial independence. I remember going on TV to talk about I Will Teach You to Be Rich. Before the camera started, the anchor leaned over to me and congratulated me on my book. "Great job," he said. "So do you have to work anymore?" I sat back and realized I'd never thought about that. And I said to him, "No, I don't have to work anymore." That was a powerful moment. And it's an example of the crossover point where your investments earn enough for you to fund your expenses automatically. Imagine one day you woke up and you had enough money in your accounts to never work again. In other words, your investments were generating so much money that the money you already have was actually producing more money than your salary. That's the crossover point, first described by Vicky Robin and Joe Dominguez in their book, Your Money or Your Life. It's an incredibly influential idea in personal finance. Money makes money, and at a certain point, your money is generating so much new money that all of your expenses are covered. This is also known as being financially independent, or FI. What can you do once you hit the crossover point? Well, at a minimum, you can do nothing. You can wake up, spend 3 hours at brunch, go work out, see friends, practice your hobby. You can choose to work or not. After all, you could spend the rest of your life spending down your investments. Many call this retiring early, or RE. Together, they're financial independence plus retiring early. That's FI plus RE, or FIRE. There's lean FIRE, which is people who've decided they can live on a lean amount of money, often $30,000 to $50,000 a year in perpetuity. They reject materialism and embrace simplicity, often in an extreme way. There's also fat FIRE, for people who want to live an extravagant life at the highest levels of spending. Ever wonder how celebrities can spend $250,000 on a single party? Well, that's because their money is earning so much money that they actually have to work to spend it all. For example, in 2018, Oprah Winfrey bought a house for $8 million. Wow, that seems outrageously expensive, right? Well, here's the twist. Because her net worth at the time was over $4 billion, if that money was even conservatively invested and returned 4%, her investments alone, not even counting her salary, would generate $160 million that year, effectively making that house free to her. Now apply that to your life. Most people won't get to $125 million in net worth. But what if you had $1 million, $2 million? What about $5 million? Run the numbers, assuming an 8% return, to see how much that would generate for you. It's eye-opening. Now, when you hit the point of financial independence, you're being paid to live because of decisions you made years ago. It's like an Indian kid studying 10 hours a day to nail the SATs, then getting amazing jobs and opportunities decades later. Little Raj doesn't remember the hours he spent studying. He just loves the results of that hard work, even 25 years later. Again, a summary of the terms. FI, that's financial independence, where you've earned enough that your investments will pay for your life in perpetuity. RE is retiring early, often in your 30s or 40s. FIRE is financial independence plus retiring early. Think of someone who retires in their 30s and will technically never have to work again because their investments cover their annual living expenses every year forever. There's lean FIRE. People who want to live a lean life, often on approximately $30,000 a year. They're likely doing fun things like going for walks in the park and bird watching. And fat FIRE, people who want to be financially independent and retire early, but live an extravagant lifestyle. Think of flying first class and staying at the Four Seasons, or putting three kids through private school. Now, achieving FIRE isn't easy. And typically, most people dismiss it out of hand. "Well, I'm too young to think about that." And then, funny enough, just a few years later, "Oh, it's too late for me to start." Funny how that changes so fast, isn't it? Or the final flourish of rationalization. "I'd rather spend my money now than nickel and dime myself for the next 30 years. The real answer, of course, is that you can choose whether the crossover point is part of your rich life. And if you want to reach it, you can choose how to achieve it. Many people in the financial independence community focus on saving a huge portion of their salary. Forget about the usual 10% or 20% savings rates, they say. How about 70%? For example, if your household income is $80,000 and your monthly expenses are $6,000, you could reach your crossover point in 38 years by following the usual advice of saving and investing 10%, or you could reach it a lot faster. How? Well, I'm going to show you with some real numbers. Option one, you could cut your monthly expenses down to $3,000. Lots of people find it difficult to imagine living on $36,000, or put it another way, to imagine cutting your spending in half. But there are countless online examples of Lean FIRE followers actually doing it. Following this strategy, you could reach your crossover point in just over 12 years. Now keep in mind the trade-off here. 12 years is extremely fast for a crossover point, but you've targeted ongoing spending of just $36,000 per year. Option two, you could raise your income. Let's say that you follow the advice on my website, iwillteachyoutoberich.com, to negotiate your salary and you get a 30% raise. If you take all that extra money and invest it, you'd hit your crossover point in 22 years. Again, notice that this takes longer than option one, a lot longer, but in this example, you've targeted spending $72,000 per year. Option three, you could do a combination of both. If you increased your income by 30% and cut your spending by 30%, you'd hit your crossover point in just 9 years. Here, you see an extremely short time to your crossover point combined with relatively high spending. This really shows you the power of targeting your income and your expenses. Most people never think about their earnings and spending in this way. And as a result, they do the same thing as most other people. They save a tiny amount each year, they end up working for decades, and then they find themselves ranting about taxes on Twitter without knowing what the hell they're talking about. With this chapter alone, you now realize that if you want to, you can dramatically change the way you approach your working years. Earn more, spend less, or earn more and spend more. You decide on your rich life. By the way, I have to tell you that I have mixed feelings about FIRE. On one hand, I love any strategy that helps people get more conscious about spending and saving. FIRE is an antidote to Americans' tepid savings rate. It absolutely obliterates the usual 10% standard by showing you that saving 25% or 40% or even 70% of your income is possible if you get crystal clear about your goals. On the other hand, many FIRE adherents exhibit classic signs of stress, anxiety, and even depression, and a lot of them think that hitting some mythical number in their spreadsheets will solve their unhappiness. It won't. You can see this by going to the Financial Independence subreddit, where you'll find thousands of people who are obsessed with quitting their jobs as quickly as possible so they can retire. As one Redditor wrote, "I look back at the past few years of my life and at my bank account, and I would gladly give away a hefty chunk of it and work longer if it meant I could have experienced more of the world and found more passions, especially with someone I had loved so much. I built my savings, but I never built my life." I have no problem setting an aggressive financial goal. In fact, I love it. I have no problem with people who have different financial goals than mine. But when people use words like miserable, rat race, and anxiety, that's a red flag. My suggestion here, remember that life is lived outside the spreadsheet. Be as aggressive as you want with your goals. In fact, dream bigger than you ever thought. But remember that money is just a small part of a rich life. David Chambers, who's 35 years old, wrote, "I was afraid to get started with investing before reading the IWT book. I had a 401k, but wasn't maxing it out, didn't have an IRA, and had no investments. My parents drilled scarcity mindsets into me growing up and were extremely risk averse. I finally set up a Roth IRA, and I've maxed it out every year. Last year, I maxed out my 401k for the first time, and I'm on track to do it again this year. I set up a personal investment account and automatically add to it every month. I did all of these things without affecting my current lifestyle and actually living a little more extravagantly. Through the investment accounts, I've got $100,000 growing for retirement and $8,000 in the personal investment account." More convenience or more control? You choose. I want investing to be as painless as possible for you. So here's what I'm going to do. I'll give you an easy version and a more advanced version. If you're the